and code our way into the May 17th, 2013 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the darkened studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Scott Pettinger, N9ALY, with this special rain report saluting Joe Schrader, W9JUV. World-class DXer and former editor of HR Report, Joe Schrader, W9JUV, became a silent key in April. While the rain crew is collecting useful audio at the Dayton Hamvention as we go to press, it seemed only proper to replay a 2007 interview with Schrader as a tribute to one of the major players in amateur radio going back more than a half a century. Here's Rain's Duane Whittingham, N9SSN, to introduce this rain replay.
This is the Rain Report, ham radio's audio feature magazine of the Internet. I'm Duane Whittingham, N9SSN. On February 23, 2007, Morse code was officially dropped from the amateur radio testing program by the FCC. Ask 10 hams what the future holds for Morse code, and you'll get many opinions like that of Joe Schrader, W9JUV, former editor of HR Report, and for 15 years a staff editor for Ham Radio Magazine. Amateur Radio Newsline co-founder and producer Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, recently spoke with Joe about this vexing question.
Many hams who either wanted Morse testing retained or returned to the more stringent 5, 13, 20 words per minute testing regime said that the fight to save Morse code exams would not be over until the proverbial fat lady sang. Well, she's not only sung her final song, but has also danced her last dance. We're not talking Morse code now, just testing. Joe Schrader, W9JUV, who I have known for many years, absolutely adores Morse code. Having sat there in your shack and watched you nonchalantly work stations all over the world while having a conversation with me, and Morse code and Morse testing has been a part of ham radio since the earliest days. It made sense back then because Morse was the only mode available to radio amateurs. So it was reasonable to assume that any exam to obtain an amateur service license would contain an element to define a candidate's proficiency in what many termed as the art form of Morse code, with many seasoned CW operators able to tell who is calling from the first dots and dashes without ever hearing the station's call sign, something Morse operators call the sound of a person's fist on a key.
You have to really go back a long way back to Samuel F. B. Morse himself and the invention by him of Morse code and telegraphy, which really literally electrified the world so far as communications was concerned. Until the invention of the telephone, of course, that was the only way that you could get messages instantaneously, first from city to city, then across the country and between continents. And until the invention of radio and its widespread use, that was the only means of rapid communications. Otherwise, you'd write a letter and hope that in a month or two, a couple of ship voyages would get it to where it was going. That's why Morse has got a lot more history than just amateur radio. As for amateur radio and our use of it, as you said, in the early days when communications was strictly by spark, though a few people experimented with trying to modulate spark and got intelligible speech across to some degree, the only mode was by Morse code, so it became a tradition even after the invention of the oscillator and modulators and AM modulation became the other mode.
I've heard this said that a good Morse operator, other Morse operators can tell who he is or her, she is, just by the first couple dots and dashes they'll come across on the radio. Is that true?
It used to be true, but in this day and age when people are using electronic keyers, that is no longer a factor. Occasionally, an individual operator will have his automatic keyer programmed in such a way as to give it a little bit of a distinctive signal. But what you're talking about is the Morse operator's swing, which dates back to originally the straight key, but more appropriately to the bug, because different operators using the same bug are going to sound very, very different.
When radio came along, it was inevitable that Morse would go with it.
It was literally the only means of transmitting a message by radio was by interrupting the signal with a key, unlike modulation as we know it today.
Didn't it really become more of a tradition as time went along, as other modes came along?
I don't don't think so, because one of the wonderful things about CW is that it gets through with very marginal signals. Single sideband, of course, has become the mode of today. That gets through a lot better than AM did. But in the AM days, a CW signal of 50 watts was probably as intelligible as a AM signal of a kilowatt when you're talking about long-distance communications. So CW's efficiency was one of the reasons that it hung on, not just that it was a tradition that people wanted to exercise.
The introduction of voice communications using AM telephony took place in the 1920s, and it was also the first time a schism occurred among hams. Seasoned Morse operators tended to look down on the new mode. Many said that there was no need for voice because, as you just said, Morse could get through far better under adverse conditions. And so it was that the proponents of Morse and the supporters of voice kind of went separate ways, but they were all still bound together by one common point in their ham radio careers. Each had passed a Morse proficiency exam because the government maintained that to get a ham license, code was a prerequisite.
One of the tenets of amateur radio is that we're supposed to be there for emergency communications in time of need. The simplest form of radio, which was CW, breaking and renewing a carrier, was both easier to create and better able to get through again under adverse conditions. So with our responsibility of being an emergency communications backup system, CW was a necessity.
Eventually, Morse even spawned its own entry-level license in the United States, the novice class, which was introduced in the mid-20th century, as a one-time-only non-renewable ticket. While it initially did have some limited voice privileges in its first incarnation, those eventually went away. It was very successful, wasn't it, for a long time?
Yes, of course, the purpose of the novice license was not to get people to talk for a one-year period and then off the air on VHF, UHF. The purpose was to give them an opportunity to learn Morse code by actually using it on the air instead of having to listen to tapes or records.
Didn't it peak at over like 120,000 novices at one time?
Yeah, I don't know what the actual number of novices was, but there were a bunch of them back in the 50s.
The philosophy held true until the latter part of the 20th century when the FCC noted that the number of hams coming into the service was dropping. The FCC, which regulates the amateur service in the United States, asked the ham community how to kickstart interest in the service. That led to dropping of the Morse code for the technician class license.
Certainly the no-code tech was a real incentive for people who wanted to communicate but weren't that interested in long-distance communications. The no-code tech really was a great boon for VHF, UHF.
It remains so. I mean, it's still the numbers coming in tend to show that. The next step in this, of course, was deciding to do away with the 13 and 20 word per minute tests and just have everybody who's going to be tested for Morse come in at 5 words a minute. If you wanted to keep the standard, wasn't that a point of kind of diluting it and saying, well, we're keeping it because the world has it, but we don't really want it?
Well, something like that, because there's long been a plateau for most people trying to learn CW where they transition from the da-da-da-da, oh yeah, that's three dots and a dash, that's V, to the da-da-da-da, that's V, recognition by the sound instead of the recognition by still counting the dots and dashes. And that came in somewhere in that period between 5 and 10 words per minute. So when they reduced the code speed to 5 words a minute, they really didn't keep an incentive for truly learning the code. You could learn what the code was, but you couldn't learn the code as a proficient operator at that speed. The good news was that at least you still had to know the code. You had to know that da-da was an A and da-dit was an N, but at least you had the background if you decided at some point along the way that, hey, this code thing sounds like fun, maybe I ought to continue to use it and improve myself, get on the air with it and try it out in the novice bands, etc.
You're listening to a conversation between Joe Schrader, W9JUV, former editor of the HR Report and a former staff editor with Ham Radio Magazine, and Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, on the topic of Morse code and its future in the U.S. amateur radio service. This is the Rain Report. Woohoo! Available as a podcast from therainreport.com. We'll be right back.
to me, the bad thing about dropping the code requirement entirely, my own personal wish was to keep the code for the extra class license, simply because that would be an incentive for people to learn the code. Code is like riding a bicycle or roller skating. It's a skill that you develop, not because riding a bicycle is the best way necessarily to go to work or pack the family up and go on a vacation, but because it's fun. And being proficient at code is a fun way to operate on the ham bands.
There are a lot of people out there saying, okay, code's gone, it's going to die, no one's going to use it, it's going to disappear. Then there are people like myself, who've always been marginal on code, who, now that it's no longer forced on me, I'm really interested in trying it because I think it's going to be fun. Do you think that more people might come to Morse now as a result of it being just a fun aspect of the hobby?
That's an optimistic, but I hope realistic way of looking at it. Certainly to me and to the people that I work on the air on code is not going to go away simply because it's not required. I have to say, when I first got my license so I'd pass the test at 13 words a minute back in the ancient days, I did not use code for a number of months, got very unproficient at it, and got embarrassed one day when I heard an odd call sign calling CQ. I got my key out, called the fellow on CW, and he came back, and I literally couldn't read what he was telling me. So I got embarrassed and decided that maybe I ought to practice a little bit, get on the air, and work some people. I've been a very active CW operator ever since.
There's a lot of people who are saying, including the FCC, who were saying that they believe that doing away with Morse is going to kickstart interest in amateur radio. It's going to bring tens of thousands, maybe millions of people, and I've heard all sorts of numbers. Realistically, looking at the history of the hobby, do you think that doing away with the Morse is going to be a real shot in the arm, especially for HF operation, or is it just going to be another passing fad?
I think it's going to be a shot in the arm for HF operations from people who are already licensed as code techs or no code techs or even novices, saying, well, since I don't have to jump over that Morse code hurdle, I'm going to get the book out and study and upgrade so I can get on 20 meters instead of being limited to 10 meters and up. From that standpoint, I think you are going to see a surge in upgrading as a result, more activity on the bands that you need a higher class general or better license for. As for bringing new people into the amateur service, I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference because we've already had the opportunity to become a ham for a long time without a CW requirement. People who were interested in becoming hams got their licenses, no code tech or whatever. So I don't think that's going to be a major issue. It will with some people who said, well, I'd like to become a ham, but I really have a problem with this Morse code business. I'm not interested in it. If I was going to be a ham, I'd be on the HF bands. Okay, we'll get those people, but I don't think that there's great mobs of that particular kind of person out there.
In other words, we're still a very specialized interest, and it's that small portion of the general public that has that technology bent, especially towards radio.
Now you're getting into a whole nother subject, and that is the competition that there is for amateur radio. When you and I got into amateur radio, it was exciting, thrilling to be able to communicate around the world with a piece of equipment that we had in our bedrooms or our basements. Today, you can sit in front of a computer and communicate far more efficiently around the world than you can by amateur radio. The bloom is off the pumpkin. The thrill that we experience, people don't appreciate because to them, it's a routine. That and the fact that there's so many other competitions for people's interests, people's times, whether it's playing games on the computer, watching television, whatever. There are a myriad of other activities that people back when we started didn't have available to them. I see it in aviation. We're having a hard time getting young people started in aviation. People who are starting to work on a pilot's license are much older than they were 10 or 20 years ago. Same thing is true in many of the sports that are recreational sports. Amateur radio is not unique in having a tough time competing for new blood. There are a couple of other things that need to be brought into the equation. One, of course, is the proliferation proliferation of digital modes and the interest in that. So in a sense, I think you're going to see digital modes taking away some of the interest in Morse code. You can do wonderful things starting with teletype and going through the various more sophisticated digital communications modes. A parallel but much different area is satellite communications. The amateur satellites are getting more and more complex, easier to communicate with. It's not just that it's Morse versus voice, it's Morse versus a whole horde of other ways to communicate via amateur radio. Will Morse be a disappearing thing? I don't think so. Because again, like riding a bicycle or roller skating, once you learn the skill, it's fun to do, and I think there are going to be people doing it long after you and I are silent keys.
This has been a conversation between Joe Schrader, W9JUV, former staff editor with Ham Radio Magazine, and former editor of HR Report, and Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, co-founder and producer of the Amateur Radio Newsline. The two were discussing the future of Morse code in ham radio now that code proficiency has been dropped by the FCC from the amateur radio testing program. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSM.
This has been a tribute to the late Joe Schrader, W9JUV, one of the good guys of ham radio who passed on this past month. Joe was 83. He'll be greatly missed. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 to 2013 Rain. All rights reserved. Next week, we'll bring you our first excerpt from the 2013 Hamvention. I'm Scott Pettinger, N9ALY, bidding you very 7-3 from all of those connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, dove, therainreport.com. This has been a tribute to the late Joe Schrader, W9JUV, one of the good guys of ham radio who passed on this past month. Joe was 83. He'll be greatly missed. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 to 2013 Rain. All rights reserved. Next week, we'll bring you our first excerpt from the 2013 Hamvention. I'm Scott Pettinger, N9ALY, bidding you very 7-3 from all of those connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, dove, therainreport.com.